You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where apparently we still recognize slavery. And I don't mean that in like an alt-right racist way. I mean that in a way that Elliot seems to be part of a sharecropping experience or something. I'm not really sure, but that's why he's not here today. We only have one co-host today, and who it is a mystery, so there's a little foreshadowing for you. As always, if you enjoy your trip into the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Let us know what you learned this week. You can do that on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever social media network you prefer. And also, if you've been paying close attention, you would see that we are now taking fan votes for the Midsider Award for Most Farcical News Story for our year-end awards. And we're also taking your nominations for the main categories, such as the Tom Brady Medal and the Romantic Manifestation Award. We've gotten some good suggestions already. For the Tom Brady Medal, somebody said Roger Goodell for covering up the 04 Patriots cheating, which is a hilarious answer because it's either the ultimate troll because the Patriots did nothing in 04, or it's completely incompetent. So that's a great answer. And then for Narcissist of the Year, somebody suggested me. Thank you. I appreciate that. We all know that this is all about me. That's the point of the show. So get your nominations in there. We want to see what you think. And the Farcical News Story of the Year is your award, Midsiders. Participate in it. We want your voice to be heard. I was going to start this episode off with a little bit about Christmas parties. I had a whole Die Hard joke weaved in there because Die Hard takes place at a Christmas party. But a couple hours ago, Daniel sent a really ridiculous news story. And I didn't want to edit the outline because it's really tough that close to the show to change the whole outline and to produce it in a way that it'll make sense. But this story, I just had to share it with you guys because it's so absolutely ridiculous. This is the Washington Post, and it says, "Trump's election stole my desire to look for a partner." It's written by somebody named Stephanie Land. And I'm going to read the first paragraph, do a little bit of summary, and then read one more paragraph, just so you can get an idea of this person. "In August, I went on 6 dates in 1 week. I had decided that I was ready to look for a partner. Enough of this dating unavailable men a half decade younger than me." So first of all, I want to say, I'm just going to stop here. You can tell from the first sentence that her issue is not Trump winning the election. She has deeper issues. 6 dates in 1 week? 6 dates? I think there's a little bit of desperation there. You're not being very selective with 6 dates. And then the third sentence isn't even a sentence. "Enough of this dating unavailable men a half decade younger than me." By the way, Daniel is now sending news stories while we're recording, which shows you he's not hosting this week because supposedly he wasn't going to have internet. Anyway, yeah, "enough of this dating unavailable men a half decade younger than me." If somebody wants to diagram that and send it to me to prove how it's a sentence, I would love to see that because I don't think that's a sentence. Anyway, continuing. "They'd never seriously consider a relationship with me, my 2 children, and our needy dog." I love how in that sentence, needy is the dog is the thing that's described as needy. "I wanted to find an equal, a man who wouldn't feel the need to step in and rescue me." Well, then stop, like, putting in giant signals, like, flashing sign, "rescue me, save me, save me." I didn't need rescuing. Fuck, like, ugh. So it continues about how she has this pit of loneliness in her stomach and how she's been living alone with her parent, with her kids for a decade. That's the, like, I wanted to say parents because it's hard to tell if she's the parent or the child here. And then she talks about the six dates and how 2 seem promising. She went on a few dates with one of them, and then he said he wasn't ready for something serious, which I have a feeling was just his, his escape hatch. He fucking pulled that ripcord and that parachute let loose, and he jumped out of that plane. And then the other one she was dating, and then apparently Trump became president, and she didn't want to date him anymore. And she didn't want to date anyone anymore. Now, what I say is this has nothing to do with Trump. This is an example of the type of people who have such a messed up psychology that they're reacting to Trump's election in this way. These are the people who are so distraught, and these are the people we're letting control and direct the conversation. I think that's really all that needs to be said about this. I just think this is absolutely ridiculous that this was published. But then again, we clicked it, and I'm talking about it on air, so they accomplished their goal in the modern clickbait media, right? Joining me this trip via GChat from his office in a sketchy warehouse in the Bay in the South, Midsider, and also pulling double duty as replacement news host and replacement gay, William Green. Are you ready, William, for it's all this responsibility?
It's some big shoes to fill, but I have a feeling that if I work really hard, I might get invited back for another show.
Maybe. Maybe that might be in the cards.
Well, I'm looking forward to the voting for the Midside Awards. So I've got a couple things I need to add to the nominations.
So you haven't cast your vote yet?
I have not cast my vote yet.
Are there any farcical news stories you're thinking about as having been the most farcical of the year?
Oh man, the problem is there's so many to choose from this year that I don't know. I haven't decided. I definitely got to narrow it down before I make my nomination.
Well, on the voting, there's a drop down where I picked the most farcical story from each episode. So I made it a little easier for you guys. You can write in your own. So if you want to write in your own, you can. But I sort of narrowed it down because, as William just wisely pointed out, there was a lot of farce in this past year.
Well, good. Because I think our first news story for today is pretty farcical too.
Yeah, I was like, man, I'm sorry we didn't get to vote on that one, but maybe you can write it in. If you think it's the most farcical of the year, write it in. So let's get to it. Let's talk about that story in the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
All right, our first news story. Starting January 20th, Donald Trump can send unblockable mass text messages to the entire nation. So this story talks about the fact that, you know, the president can send messages much like the ones that you get for Amber Alerts or police messages. And it's just written like basically they took some guy's tweet about Trump's tweets being bad, wait till he starts sending emergency alert messages, and turned it into a clickbait news story. And this is New York Magazine. So,
well, that's the thing. It's somebody's bad joke on Twitter, right? Because everyone's like, that's one of the number one things I hate about Twitter, right? Whenever anything happens, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to come up with the most creative and unique joke out there. And this is an example of it. And then New York Magazine.
But it's turned into
it
the news story. Yeah, this is as bad as the porn playing on CNN story. This is exactly the same, in fact, as the porn playing on CNN story.
How?
Because that was completely made up on Twitter as a joke. And it turned into a news story that people just picked up and covered everywhere. At least this story, they actually researched it a little bit. And they talk about what kinds of alerts that the WEA, it's called, deliver. And they talk about, have a nice dig in saying Trump is probably too stupid to operate the alert system. So,
yeah, I'm sure. He just figured out how to play all of you in the media, but he's too dumb to figure out that.
I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts about this story? I think it's pretty pretty clickbaity, pretty farcical. Apparently, we're all concerned now. We weren't concerned that Obama could send us these messages, but we're certainly concerned that Trump could send us these messages at any time.
Well, there's two things about this. One, this is just more of the media's strategy of Trump hysteria, where they want people to be as hysterical as possible. I mean, it's like I said in the opening. They want people like this woman to go nuts over Trump. They want the idea that Trump could text us over and over again to be a real thing to make him out to be this boogeyman. It's not a real thing. It's not going to happen. One, he's not dumb enough to abuse it. And two, if he was, somebody would stop him and be like, the boy who cried wolf, the Trump who cried wolf. Like, it's not going to happen. But they want him to be a boogeyman. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, even if he did, would you kind of appreciate that? I know I would. That would kind of be like his commitment to being the troll candidate and the troll president. Like, if you woke up to a good morning text from Trump every morning. Good morning, East Coast. Good morning, Central Time. Good morning, West Coast.
Well, the real thing, it would be cool, though, if he could instead troll individual users. Because, you know, unfortunately, it's a broadcast system. But if he could send Rosie O'Donnell to Trump, like, day 321, you know, repressing women for 321 days or something. I don't know. Like it would be the ultimate troll machine. But unfortunately,
what if he used the NSA files and trolled individual citizens? Like, did you see the episode of the new season of Black Mirror where they found the kid, they had the video of the kid masturbating, they hacked his system, and they found that he was masturbating, and they made him do all this fucked up shit by texting him, and then at the end it turned out he was the pedophile, and that's why they did it to him? What if Trump did that to people? How fucking funny would that be?
Well, we live in the world tomorrow. Live in the world of tomorrow.
Come on, that would have been the ultimate twist for that episode if at the end you found out the person texting people was Donald Trump.
Well, the next season is coming out, so maybe we'll see that.
Don't steal my ideas, Charlie. I forget your last name. Who's British?
All right. Well, the next story we have is the Merriam-Webster Dictionary has become a hilarious, shade-throwing LGBTQ ally. You know, I throw up in my mouth a little bit when I have to list all those letters.
You forgot the plus, William.
The headline does not have the plus. So language is now more important than ever. In 2016, you wouldn't
Isn't
think that
ironic,
a dictionary.
With the dictionary having this story about like changing the words to be proper, that the headline doesn't even have the proper non-exclusionary terminology?
It is slightly ironic. Just slightly, though. In 2016, you wouldn't think that a dictionary would be such a valuable ally for the LGBTQ community on social media. But one of the most well-known American publishing companies is using their account to be just that. Thanks to Merriam-Webster, the social media team, and a commitment to the evolution of language, this dictionary has become a crucial account to follow. While labels can be limiting when explaining and understanding the spectrum of identities and experiences in the LGBTQ community, they certainly are politically and socially useful, and Merriam-Webster is a key player in legitimacy. Now, I want to know, was that copy and pasted from some sort of PR wire? Like, it sounds like these are Huffington Post is where the story is from. It sounds like something off the peer wire. But basically, they've been tweeting words like the first word that they give is genderqueer, like mashed together as one word. And then the second word they give is sapiosexual. So these are new words that they've added to their Merriam-Webster online dictionary. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that Midsider Nolan submitted this story. So thank you, Nolan. This is a beautifully farcical story because one, this is the embracing of relativism and letting relativism into the dictionary, which is exactly the opposite of the purpose of words. Words are to identify things in reality. I mean, that's one of the best quotes from Atlas Shrugged. One day you'll find that words have meanings. Well, no longer do words have meanings, because if you don't like the meaning, you just change the word or you come up with a word that means something else. And it's just these words, they're all floating abstractions now, right? I mean, that's something I'm going to throw back to you in a second, because I think you have a little more expertise because you have the whole sex podcast you do and everything. But to me, these words are floating abstractions. But then at the same time, you know, not only is Merriam-Webster doing this, but they're taking the initiative and they're being sort of a cultural warrior. Like, we don't need the dictionary to have sass and talk back to people. Just say, this is the word.
But you're not understanding what the Huffington Post is saying. They're one of the...
of course I can't. They're using non-objective words and floating abstractions.
That's such a valuable ally to the LGBTQ community.
A Twitter account.
Yeah, a Twitter account is such a valuable ally.
Can you imagine, like, World War III breaks out and people are like, but how many Twitter accounts are on our side? That is how we will win the battle.
Well, or also, you know, how many, I want to know the exact measure of how many bigots, you know, looked this word up in the dictionary and then changed and became not bigoted, because that would be a valuable ally. If somehow reading this definition, which I will not read.
Oh, I want you to read it because I want to not change my bigotry.
Okay, here we go. Genderqueer, of, relating to, or being a person whose gender identity cannot be categorized as solely male or female.
Okay.
Genderqueer, well, it just breaks it down into different quotes here. Genderqueer is a relatively new term that is used by a few different groups. Some people identify as genderqueer because their gender identity is androgynous.
Okay. Isn't that what androgynous means?
Okay.
didn't they just say genderqueer means androgynous, so they made up a different word for androgynous? That's what that just said, right?
I think so, but are you now changed? Are you less bigoted now?
No, I'm more bigoted because I'm fucking pissed off I have to listen to this bullshit.
And sapiosexual is a term that means sexually attracted to highly intelligent people.
I've heard this before. There's a lot of this on dating sites and dating apps.
Yeah.
Is this a legitimate thing?
I don't know. I mean, I think so. I think sapiosexual...
You were so confident you were going to come back, and then you reply with, I don't know.
Well, no, I was looking at it in a larger section. I mean, sapiosexual is a valid word, but they're using it in tweets to, you know, they're tweeting two different things and then posting these definitions as links, right? So it depends on what the context was that they were quoting sapiosexual. But and then in another tweet, they have transgender. The definition is spiking after Sarah E. McBride made history at Dems in Philly.
What? So, what did you? I don't even know what you just said.
I was reading the tweet. So
Sarah McBride made history in Philly?
I guess.
What does that have to do with being transgender?
I don't know. I guess people were looking at the word transgender. So, yeah, that's
okay.
That.
Aren't these floating abstractions, though?
Some of these words are. I mean, sapiosexual is a valid word, but genderqueer, I mean, yeah, genderqueer is, like you said, there's another word that fits that. You could argue the connotation might be different. I don't know. I'm trying to argue the other side, or at least, you know, save this somewhat. But I don't know. We already have words for these things, and sometimes mixing, like a lot of these news concepts, there'll also be sort of anti-concepts, like they'll mix in things. Like genderqueer mixes in a lot of politics. People who's like, androgynous is a very neutral sort of like more medical term, and genderqueer certainly brings in all the LGBTQ baggage.
Well, right, and that's the thing that's going on, and that's where the line's delineated, is between biology and psychology, correct? And that's the question is, you know, biologically, there are really only two genders. There's male and female biologically. I guess you could say the androgynous or whatever word you want to use for it. But then psychologically, there are people who feel different ways, or their brain is wired different ways. And that's where they start creating these terms, because they say the way I feel doesn't line up with my biology. But it's hard [S2] Right. [S1] To tell if that is, and we talked about this on the Caitlyn Jenner episode, but it's hard to tell how much of that is legitimate and how much of that is, say, due to bad biology or bad or some sort of psychological trauma.
Right, right. And I think we don't have the terms. Like that would be good in a sense of coming up with new terms for certain pronouns. Like I struggle to talk about, like, what pronouns do you use when you're talking about Caitlyn Jenner when he was driving a car, you know, at Le Mans, let's say, you know, like, because he did drive cars, you know, like, do you use he or she now? Like, you know, we're talking about past when he was a man and now is a female, you know, is a woman. So you get very confused. You get tripped up on yourself trying to make descriptions about things, facts in reality, because in this case, we've taken what should be simple, right? The he and she being the biological one, and we're overloading it with extra definitions, right? Of, oh, well, I don't identify that way. Well, that doesn't change. Now we've said, well, that doesn't change the facts of reality that you a XY or a XX, right? That doesn't change those facts of reality. And so we don't know what to describe things as.
Right. But to me, what I've learned about this is it's how they're presented to you as a first impression type thing. And I think the reason you struggle with the Bruce Jenner thing is he was always a man. Like, I still don't refer to him as she, really, because to me, I've always known him as a man. And it's very hard for me to just change that all of a sudden. Whereas on Survivor, there's a person this season who presents as a male and as a gay guy. But it turns out that he is actually a transgender woman who became a man. So born a woman and then became a man. But I still refer to him as he because when I first saw him for a while before I learned it, he was always a guy to me. So I just got used to that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Even though that contradicts my basic idea that he's not really a guy, he's just a woman who takes testosterone. So,
right.
But I actually have a question for you. In regards to this, and I was hoping Elliot would be on this episode too, because I wanted to get both of your perspectives on this. Just about gay rights in relation to the Donald Trump presidency and Mike Pence vice presidency. Because I know you're like me, where you're very strongly individualistic and small government. But one of our listeners, a friend of mine who's a Survivor fan, actually, I was talking to him, and he said he doesn't understand how I can have so many people who agree with me on the show, that how I could have found that many people, and how we're not utterly distressed about the Trump presidency because, for instance, of gays being discriminated against in employment and legalized discrimination, basically. He's saying, you know, especially because Mike Pence and what's going on in Indiana, he's worried that could happen. As a gay man, are you worried about that? Or what do you think? Is there something wrong with that argument? Or
I think that The thing that's wrong with that argument is the fact that there's a equivalence or a lack of equivalency about being upset and concerned if Hillary had won. As concerned about my rights, my individual rights, being threatened, no matter which president would have been elected, which candidate would have been elected. And there are destructive things that affect me as an individual, no matter which president was elected. And things have gotten better in a lot of ways for sort of equal rights for gays, but the destruction that comes with being a protected class, like adding more rights, you know, using my air quotes there, adding more rights is just as destructive as rolling a right back, because that is effectively what you're doing by making protected class rights, is you're taking away other people's rights, and that's destructive to society. And to me personally, you know, I do own a business, and you know, changing who I can hire or who I can and can't quote unquote discriminate against changes how I have to behave as a business person. And certainly, that's just as much a threat to me and my happiness and my earning potential, all sorts of other things, as it would be if there was some, you know, Pence revolution, you know, saying gays have to, or gays can be discriminated against. But even that one is sort of a weird one to get hung up on, because I think everyone should be able to be discriminated against in the private sector. That's where we need anti-discrimination laws, not in the private sector. If you're a bigoted business owner, then go at it. You're not going to be as good as someone who isn't bigoted, and the market will take care of that.
Yeah, I agree with you completely about that. You should be able to allowed to refuse service to anyone you want to refuse service to. If you want to refuse service to people who are below a certain height, you should be allowed to. I mean, that would probably discriminate against me a lot, but hey, you should be allowed to do that. And what I hear from exactly what you're saying is it's basically an issue of self-identity. And what I mean by that is how you define yourself. You're not defining yourself solely or primarily as being gay. That's one element of yourself. But because of groupthink, people identify themselves primarily by, say, their sexuality or their gender. And because of that, they're more scared of a Trump presidency than they are a Hillary presidency. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. So that satisfactorily answers my question. So I think maybe we should move on to these couple other news stories, which now we can talk about the groupthink of religion.
Well, I see you ruined my perfect transition here. I was going to say this is the second crime that happened this week in Columbus. Ohio State.
Well, let's Ohio be clear State. What the first one was. That was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Well, it really came to fruition this week when Penn State got screwed by Ohio State in the top four picks for the NCAA football playoffs.
What Ohio William State is got referring picked. To is there was a really bad spot where Michigan State in overtime had stopped Ohio State, and basically that meant they had won the game. But the officials gave the first down to Ohio State, and then Ohio State scored on the next play and won the game. And because of that, Ohio State is now number three in the college football playoff, even though Penn State won their conference. And the reason that is because Ohio State beat Michigan and Michigan beat Penn State, but Penn State beat Ohio State, correct?
Right, correct. Yeah.
So it's all confused in that way. To me, this just exposes the idea that it needs to be eight teams in the playoffs. There needs to be a quarterfinal, a semifinal, and a final. You know, there are a bunch of teams that are left off that could have a legitimate shot at winning, or let's put it this way, could have a legitimate shot about losing to Alabama in the finals.
So Ohio State knife attacker Abdul Artan was taking a class about microaggressions. Before he was shot dead while attempting to murder a bunch of people with a car and a butcher's knife, Ohio State University student Abdul Artan, a Somali-born Pakistani immigrant who reportedly became radicalized after learning about injustice committed against fellow Muslims, was enrolled in a class called Crossing Identity Boundaries. In fact, he had
he crossed a lot of identity boundaries with his car.
That's true. In fact, he had a group project on microaggressions due later this week. The assignment, worth 15% of his grade, required students to find a dozen examples of microaggressions on social media and explain which identity groups were the victims, according to the syllabus. So, yeah. So you take a class on microaggressions and then go out and kill a bunch of people. This would be like the equivalent of like someone taking an anger management class and doing the same thing, like showing up to work the next day and yelling at everyone.
Well, don't you think that's the problem with, I can't think of the word right now, but I'm just going to use the word legitimizing. Legitimizing a term like microaggressions. Again, to me, microaggression is a floating abstraction. I don't think it refers to anything actual in reality. I think you basically use it to label anything that upsets you. Oh, I don't like how he's tying his shoe, therefore microaggression. But by making it legitimate, it actually turns it into the feeling of an aggression. And what I mean by that is, if somebody punches you in the face, that is an act of aggression. Agree?
Definitely.
Okay. And if somebody does that, because it's an act of aggression, there is a rational, emotional, and adrenal response to that. But now, because we're treating microaggressions the same way, people are responding like this. You said in the article it says that he saw that other Islamic people were suffering injustice, therefore he ran over people with his car, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So I was thinking, you know, the fact that you take someone who's clearly a little mentally off, right, and have them focus on finding microaggressions, like this is borderline, you know, this would be malpractice. If you had this a psychologist that was treating you doing this, right? Like you don't want to be focusing on these sort of like negative emotions, like finding them out in the environment for someone who is already on the wrong path. I mean, I'm not trying to say that this person is not to blame. What I'm saying is you certainly can see a causal relationship here between someone focusing on microaggressions and doing microaggression research and getting angry about things. Other unrelated things could certainly add fuel to an already burning fire.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, is you're teaching these kids who have developing brains these things that become premises. So the premise in his head is that there's no difference between an act of aggression and a microaggression. And then he can define microaggression however he wants. That's a dangerous psychology to hand to someone.
Yeah, couldn't we get as much usefulness, which is actually zero, but I'm saying, about going out and finding...
Yes, the answer is yes to any question you ask right now. Could we get as much usefulness out of a dead puppy? Yes, we could.
as much usefulness out of having students go out and finding micro affirmations? Why do we have to
even
focus
the
on the
alarm
negative?
Agrees with you. What is that yep. alarm, by the way?
It's customers coming in and out, I think.
So you've had two customers during this time we've been recording. Awesome. I'm going to count the number of customers now.
Well, I always push the cough button, so you'll never know for exactly how many.
Oh. All right. I count two so far.
All right. Well, we have breaking news. The FBI blames Christmas party for being
Wait,
shot
were
up
we
by
done with
Muslim
the last
terrorists.
One?
I was done.
Oh, I felt like that wasn't finished, but okay.
FBI blames
Oh, no,
Christmas
I know
party.
What I wanted to say. I remember. Oh. Is that a new term you came up with?
I just made that up. So it's copyright the midside.
The counterculture starts now, ladies and gentlemen. I think
micro affirmations.
I think it's season 5, the year 2017. We're going to make micro affirmations a thing on this podcast.
I think it dovetails nicely with our, interpersonal hostility theme.
I agree 100%. That's why I like it. And by the way, me saying this is a micro affirmation towards you because I'm basically saying you're smart.
I feel affirmed. All right. FBI blames Christmas party for being shot up by Muslim terrorists. Good news, everyone. The authorities have finally cracked the case of the San Bernardino massacre, and the fault isn't Islam, it's Santa. San Bernardino terrorist Saeed Farouk shot up his co-workers because he was angry over having to attend a mandatory Christmas-themed lunch where he was coerced to pose for a group photo in front of a decorated tree, the FBI said. The photo, taken before Farouk excused himself from the 2015 year-end party to fetch his assault. The 28-year-old is seen looking surly, his hands stiffly by his sides, standing next to coworkers, one of whom was wearing a Santa Claus beard.
That's probably because he had to go to a fucking Christmas party for his office.
Emails discovered by investigators reveal Farouk's wife, a partner in crime, Pakistani native Fien Malik, to her husband's Christmas-themed mandatory. She had essentially made the statement that she didn't think that a Muslim should have to participate in a non-Muslim holiday. San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Bergen, an interview that ran on Nightline. That reality is one over the very, very few pieces of potential evidence that we have that we can say that probably is a motive in this case.
So I have a question, and I raised this at the beginning of the podcast too. Is slavery a thing in this country again? Like, was he required to go to this Christmas party, or he was fired?
I don't think so. I think if it was during work hours, they could require him to attend. But I'm not sure. You could just take leave. You know what I mean? You could just say, okay, well, I'll just take my afternoon break or whatever, right? Like, you're right. You could just walk away, right? But that's not even the point of this story. The motive here is clearly Islam. It was not Santa. Santa is not to blame here. I have to defend Santa here.
Well, it raises Santa's a broader fault. Point. And the broader point here is, don't we victim blame in terrorism? I mean, in rape, we're not supposed to victim blame, right? Like, you shouldn't have been walking there. You shouldn't have been dressed like that. You shouldn't have been drinking. Like, why'd you put yourself in a dangerous situation? All of those things we're not supposed to say. But terrorists rape the Twin Towers. And what I mean by that is they go into them when we didn't want them to be and destroyed them. So they rape the Twin Towers and then they blame America. Oh, how dare you? You invited that on you. Why is it okay to say that there? But it's not okay to victim blame and rape. So in terrorism, in this is the Christmas party's fault. It's your fault somebody committed an act of aggression against you and shot you up. But with rape, we can't say that. Now, I'm not advocating victim blaming and rape. I'm saying the inverse. Why is it okay to victim blame here?
Well, not okay to victim blame here. And it's important to note that sure, you can you can look at the very, like, we can get ridiculous with this. They're looking at one cause, shame, but not the fundamental cause. The one cause of the causal chain was party, but that doesn't, like, I went to a Christmas party this year. Does that mean that I could have shot up a place, right? Like, there's another link in the causal chain there of motive. I mean, otherwise you could be ridiculous and just say him pulling the trigger was the cause of the massacre, right? Like, you literally could go absurd here without coming back to the fundamental of what was the ideas. That's what the motive really is. What were the fundamental idea or the fundamental concept that drove this person to take whatever action it was? That's what motive is.
Well, that's the same concrete thing to use the rape metaphor. It's the same thing. Oh, yeah. The cause is him having a penis.
Yeah, yep.
So the cause here is what? Islam, right?
Yeah, the fundamental cause here is Islam.
Yeah, we said it. Come at us, bro. Anything else to add to this story?
Oh, that's it.
I mean, I just think we all should need to point out that it's really fucking dangerous that it's the FBI saying this. This isn't like some fringe group or something. This is the FBI. And if the FBI
this is certainly people who should know what motive is.
Right. And if their job is to protect us, and that's what they're saying, they're not going to be able to protect us properly. And that is a scary thought. You know, we're going to sit here. I ask you the question of, aren't you worried about, you know, Donald Trump's presidency as a gay man? Isn't this more dangerous to our safety and well-being of everyone? Gay, straight,
yeah, absolutely.
Trans.
If the FBI, what conclusion, let's imagine somebody sitting in the FBI just naively and saying, well, if the motive here was Santa and required Christmas parties, then we need to stamp that out, right? We need less Santa and less Christmas parties, right? If you don't identify the motive properly, you come to the wrong conclusions.
Yeah, I feel like this should be the story for the final Die Hard movie. Because it started with the incompetence of the government being unable to stop terrorists at a Christmas party. So this could be the final one. Old habits die hard. Done.
Oh, man. Get writing on it.
All right, I will. But in the meantime, let's talk about some other movies in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I'm going to start off with a review this week because I finally saw Arrival. William, have you seen this movie?
I have not seen it yet.
You say yet. Do you intend on seeing it?
I've heard some good things about it. It sounds like the first 40 minutes or so are pretty interesting.
You mean before you figure out they're using a sci-fi premise that can't really be executed?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the story.
Okay. Well, I'm going to explain it. So this is going to have spoilers. So if you do intend on seeing it and you don't want to know what's going on going into it, fast forward now. Hit that button where you can like move 15 seconds forward at a time like I do during all commercials during the Adam and Dr. Drew show. So basically what this movie is about is Amy Adams is a language expert. And aliens land on Earth in 12 places around the Earth. And the humans are trying to figure out how to communicate with the aliens. And the aliens eventually say, we're going to give you a weapon, and then they give something that they don't realize has been given to Amy Adams. And the alien language is non-linear, so it's circular. And what happens is, they say this theory during the movie that as you learn to speak another language, apparently it affects how your brain develops, which I've never heard this theory before. It sounds a lot like cultural relativism to me. But I guess the basic idea is, whatever language you learn to speak in changes how your brain develops. So basically you interact with the world differently. So the idea would be, you know, people in Spain because they speak Spanish, people in France because they speak French, people in England, people in America that speak English, they all experience the world differently because of how their brains are wired differently. I don't know. That's what they're saying. But they use that premise to set up the gift that Amy Adams is given. Because she's the only one who learns to speak the language, because she's the language expert, she starts living non-linearly. And what I mean by this is, William, you've seen Deep Space Nine, correct?
Right.
It's very reminiscent of Sisko and the prophets in the wormhole, because the wormhole were non-linear beings. They weren't tied down by time. Well, it's the same thing here. Amy Adams can then see her life from start to finish. So the other plot that's going on in the movie is, the movie starts with the death of her child. And the child dies of cancer at like 18 or 16 or something. The movie starts with that. Then it goes into the arrival plot. Then the end of the movie is the aliens leaving. But because they've given her the gift of being able to live non-linearly, that's when we see the child being born and the decision to have the child. So you have two plots being told inversely. The alien plot goes from start to finish, and the child plot goes from finish to start. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it's elegantly designed, but the problem with a story like this is human beings are simply linear creatures. We have a beginning and an end, and that's what makes our life meaningful. It's impossible to reconceptualize any sort of life, thought process, and communication that's non-linear. And if you try to, you're just trying to create something that's not possible. And that's ultimately where the movie falls, because of course it creates things like predestination paradoxes. Because the kid died at the beginning, at the beginning of the movie, and it was always destined that the kid was going to die, well then she had to do everything she was going to do in the movie to get to the kid dying. Even though in the movie she says, you know, if you knew everything that was going to happen in your life, would you make any different choices? It's sort of a moot point at that point because of they're trying to conceptualize something that isn't there.
So would you say this movie is naturalistic then in the way the plot is constructed? I mean, if the character's choices can't matter, if she can't make any different choices, it sounds like just watching a what if scenario.
That's essentially what you're doing, and that's what I was toying with the whole time I was watching it, because it's very slow and it's very much an alien arrival perspective, a movie just from her perspective. And you just see what she's doing the whole time. And the reason naturalism can sometimes be tough to identify is because you see characters making choices. But I would ultimately say it's naturalistic because, as you just said, her choices are rendered moot by the fact of the basic mechanic of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I think aesthetically, it exists in a ground between naturalistic and romantic, because there are, you know, there's a lot of, I would say, symbolic plot choices and, you know, stylistic choices. But like I said, it ultimately undermines itself, which is the problem with using such of a thing, with such a mechanic, such a device.
So I guess more of a watch on Apple TV.
Yeah, I wish that I had done that. I had watched it on TV. It wasn't really worth going to the movie theater for. I would have rather been watching the Buffalo Bills lose the game against the Oakland Raiders, because I went into the movie and they were winning, and I came out of it and I was like, what the fuck? How did they lose? So that would have been a more enjoyable experience for me. I mean, I love Amy Adams. I love the fact that she's fronting a movie. She's probably going to get Oscar buzz for this. And it is well produced. You know, I'd still give it like a 7 because of the production and, you know, her acting in it is so great, but ultimately it's just, there are better things to do with your time. You know, maybe if you've got a weekend or something to where you want to watch it and you like sci-fi. I mean, honestly, if this was not a sci-fi movie, I probably would not have enjoyed it at all, but I'm a sci-fi guy. So I enjoyed those elements of it. All right. So now let's move forward to movies that are going to be coming out.
Trailer Takedown.
First trailer. This weekend, two big trailers were released. One was on Sunday, and I think the other was on Saturday. I don't know. I saw it during the Clemson ACC championship win. I didn't really see it fully, so I watched it online later. But this is for a big summer blockbuster. It's a Marvel movie. The first trailer is for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I can't really summarize it because there wasn't much of a plot to it. All I can say is this. and maybe you can tell me something different, and maybe you saw something different. I was not entertained by this movie. I felt like they wanted me to laugh, but I found it annoying more than anything. Like, the Baby Groot stuff was excruciating to me. It was so stupid.
Yeah, I want to tackle it. The Baby Groot stuff was disappointing. Like, I guess are they taking that character seriously, or is he now the comic relief? And then, like, how does the physics of that, like, situation happen? Like, he doesn't weigh a billion pounds, does he? Like, I don't understand. It just was cringe. It just made me cringe when I watched it. So definitely tackling this one.
Yeah, I'm tackling it for the same reason. The whole Baby Groot thing was they were trying to teach him not to push some button to destroy the world, and he kept being like, "I am Groot," to push the button. And then the tag of the trailer was some Asian alien read the aura or something of Star-Lord and found out that he actually, you know, wants Gamora. And then when she says that publicly, Drax flips out and thinks it's funny, but it's not funny at all. It's just like, are we adults here? Like, who gives a shit? Although I will say this, Chris Pratt is looking more jacked than he did in the first one, isn't he?
Yeah, he looks good. Yeah, he's funny. He looks good. I don't know why we have to waste him on something like this, but
he's in everything now. He's probably going to be in the Jurassic World sequel too, right?
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, so let's go to the second trailer. Another summer blockbuster here, The Mummy, which I'm not sure if it's a reboot of the original Mummy movie or if it's just a movie called The Mummy, which is about a mummy. This is starring Tom Cruise. It starts where you see a solo shot of Tom Cruise in a plane, and then it goes down to seeing a sarcophagus or a coffin being lifted in front of a cave that looks like it's going to suck the biggest dick in the entire world. Then the sarcophagus, coffin, whatever it is, gets raised up even more, and the plane crashes. Tom Cruise throws some woman out of the plane to save her, and he goes down with the plane, and then somehow he comes back to life, and he has to fight a female mummy. Now, I guess this is a good win for feminism because there's a female mummy, but at the same time, it just makes it sort of seem like a Suicide Squad sequel because she sort of reminds me of the Enchantress.
Yeah, I think this looks like basically it's Mission Impossible 38 or whatever number we're on. That's basically what it looks like to me.
What if we had Mission Impossible, but we added the villain from Suicide Squad?
and I'm with you. I couldn't tell if this was a remake of the original Mummy, which I actually liked the original.
Yeah, with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, it was funny. It was good. It was entertaining. Yeah. It was up there with me. I put that in the same class as like the old Independence Day, right? It was one of those fun summer blockbusters that, you know, you go in, get some air conditioning, get some popcorn, enjoy a good movie, you know?
Yeah. 100%. But this one, I'm tackling.
Tackle. Yeah, definitely tackling. We're 100% agreement.
Let's see if we can go 3 for 3 here. The last trailer we have is the Belko Experiment. This is by writer-director James Gunn, who is the same guy who did and is doing Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and he did Guardians of the Galaxy 1. This is about office workers who get locked in their building and are forced to kill each other. And they're told, if you don't kill each other, you know, if 10 of you don't die, or like 5 of you, if you each don't kill someone, we're going to kill 10. And then eventually it's like, if 10 don't die, we're going to kill 30 or something of that nature. So basically the entire incentive to kill each other is the fact that they're being told they have to kill each other or more will die.
This is tackle. It's just slash porn. Like, I don't understand slasher porn. What possible entertainment value can you get out of something like this? Unless you're watching it just to laugh at it. And there are other horror movies that I enjoy doing that too. But this is just going to be stupid. Tackle.
John C. McGinley, though.
I can't get past the premise.
Here's the problem with the premise. This is the reason it's supposed to not just be, as you said, torture porn, murder porn, is it's masquerading as an ethical piece, an ethical consideration.
Oh, let me guess. The metaphor is all corporations are evil.
I mean, that's essentially what they're going for, right? Because you have you have the few lines about collectivism in there, right? You know, doing it for the greater good, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's the experiment, because the whole point is, will people act selfishly and kill each other, or band together and fight and not go with their captors? That's basically
Didn't we see this dramatized much better and much more effectively in the Batman series with the Joker? I mean, we see what the right moral outcome there is, to reject the premise, right?
Right. We definitely see that there. And, you know, this has also been done in The Purge as well, correct?
Yes.
But the problem with this movie is there's a basic failure in the setup of this ethical dilemma and experiment. If someone's holding a gun to you and they say, do this or I'm going to kill the person, if they kill the person, you are not morally responsible for them killing the person.
And yeah, that's a great point.
The only way they can get you to do what they want you to do is if they can convince you you're morally responsible for their actions. No, they're the ones shooting the person. So if they go blow up the UN, or, well, that might be a good thing, but you know what I mean, though. If they say, shoot Donald Trump or I'll kill your wife, and then they kill your wife, they're fucking evil. And it's a tragedy, and you are a victim at that point of them. You are not morally responsible for them shooting your wife.
Makes sense to me.
All right. Now, before we move on to Reddit on Reddit, I want to hit a few news stories pretty quickly here. One's an upcoming documentary, and then there's a couple interesting things that were said by some actors. So the first thing here is that Adam Carolla is producing another documentary. So he's done his two car documentaries. If you listen to his podcast, he did one on, what's his name? Paul Newman.
And then the 24-hour war.
Right, and the 24-hour war is his new one, right? And that's about the Ford Corporation getting involved with racing?
Yeah, Ford winning Le Mans.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say Le Mans, but I didn't want to seem like a jackass. But yeah, okay, so it's about that. But now he's getting involved with Dennis Prager, who has a website called PragerU. He's a noted... so here it says, Prager is an observant Jew. Prager attended graduate school at Columbia University. And as Carolla says, he's Ivy League and I'm Bush League. This movie is called No Safe Spaces. Safe Spaces. And as Carolla says, college campuses are supposed to be where diversity of opinion is celebrated, not silenced. So here's the question I have for you, William.
All right.
Is this going to be worth seeing for people like you and I, or is this more going to be useful for people in the general culture? Because I kind of feel like this is something that maybe like I've seen before and I'll be like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think it'll be targeted more for a general audience. I think a lot of people don't realize what's happening on campus, so it'll be a more of an awareness sort of thing, but I think we'll be able to find some value in it. I mean, he's got another documentary coming out too.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
If anyone's wondering what happened out there, I was just clicking to another news story to get another quote, and it fucking autoplayed a video. God damn
it. Yeah, I hate when it does that.
Yeah. I can see what you're saying.
I was going to say, he's got another documentary he's working on too, the Willie T. Ribbs documentary, which apparently he wanted it to, Willie T. Ribbs wanted it to be called Uppity Nigger, but I don't think that's going to be the actual title. I'm not sure what the working title is right now. But
oh, that's the one in between, right? That's the one he's working on right now?
Yeah, that's the one he's working on right now. So I'm really excited about this. The first two were really good. So I have high hopes for this one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And at the very least, if you don't know what the fuck we're talking about and you think we're crazy, be on the lookout for this documentary that they're making and watch it. We'll talk about it more as it comes out. Maybe we'll review it. The interesting thing, though, is they were going to speak on a college campus about it. And then they were banned from speaking once the college campus found out what the talk was about. So kind of proving their point right there.
Yep.
Next story I have here is about The Walking Dead. So Alana Masterson came back to the show after a while off. And apparently during the time she was off, she had a child. And during the new episode, she looked noticeably heavier than she did before, which of course presents continuity issues in the sense of this is the zombie apocalypse. So how did she gain weight? Now, the controversy here, and I use that in air quotes as William was doing earlier, is that people were apparently trolling her online and quote-unquote body shaming her. So, of course, she made a long post on Instagram about how to stand strong and, you know, don't be body shamed and all of that, and how she did it for her child. And she did this under a picture of her child, which doesn't seem really appropriate to me to put your child in that situation, but who am I to tell her how to raise her kid? But this is like Adam Carolla says about that letter,
fuck open bitch. Letters to your, yeah, from
yeah,
your...
from the West Wing wrote, what's his name? Yeah. The one I made fun of on Facebook. Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, just fucking talk to your kid about it. Like, if you want to talk to your kid and be like, don't let yourself be body shamed, talk to your kid. But I think there's a deeper issue here. This is what I want to ask you about. If you're on a show, you know, and you're in a movie or a TV show or even a model, don't you have a responsibility to take care of your body in a certain way? And in a show, it's whatever the director wants you to do.
Yeah, I think as an entertainer, you know, you have you your body is part of what your value is to the director or the writer or the showrunner in this case. The equivalent I would come up with, you know, if I went into work drunk, you know, with my mind altered, like I'm selling my mind, like that would be a serious breach. Now, I'm sure there's ways of working around certain things, right? Like I don't know how impactful this really was, but something like pregnancy, if I feel like you can shoot around a lot of that, you know, like it depends on where, what kind of character she is and what, and you know, how the shooting schedule lines up with what part of her pregnancy and all this other stuff. I mean, it's a complicated thing. I'm not saying it's not something you can work around. I mean, the equivalent would be like, if I'm sick and I need medication, you know, obviously they wouldn't put me on, you know, something to do with explosives at work, right? Like it wouldn't make any sense, or driving around a forklift. I think those same things can happen, but yeah, at the same time, you are responsible for your body. But this one I think falls more in that sick category of like, you know, it could have been planned, but most likely not planned, because I have a feeling she wouldn't want to be pregnant while shooting. You know, you've got to kind of treat it that more like someone being sick.
How dare you? You just called a baby a parasite. Now you just pissed off all the right-wing people who liked us.
Oh, no.
No, I agree.
There goes two listeners.
I don't know. We have a balance, I think. But I think what you're talking about is just – no, I don't need to say that because we know what you're talking about. I think the important thing to mention here is this is after she had the child already. And, I mean, the picture of the kid on Instagram is – I mean, the kid's not a baby. The kid's like almost looks like a toddler at this point. So she's got to be at least one, you know, or close to being 1 year old. I don't know how old the kid is, but she didn't lose the pregnancy weight, basically. I mean, the character wasn't a skinny character to begin with. I want to be clear about that, but it was a noticeable difference.
Yeah.
So I just think it's unprofessional, and that she responds this way as if like she can do whatever she wants. And I also think it represents a lack of integrity on the showrunner's parts to keep her on the show and not hold her responsible for it and let her talk like this publicly. If it were me and she came back and did that, I would kill her off.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as being cut from a football team, right? You show up being physically unable, you don't pass a physical, they don't accept you. You get cut.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, last story here is Mark Wahlberg took a controversial stance within Hollywood. And apparently upset the rest of Hollywood. So he's been promoting his movie Patriots Day, which is about the Boston Marathon bombing. And he was asked about his thought on Hollywood trying to undercut Donald Trump's presidential campaign. You know, we've seen, especially me in my fucking Facebook feed all the time, because I know people who work in the industry, it's all anti-Trump shit. You know, they're the people who are blowing the trumpet the loudest about how evil and racist he is and about how this is the end of the world. So this is what Wahlberg said. A lot of celebrities did do and shouldn't. You know, it just goes to show you that people aren't listening to that anyway. They might buy your CD or watch your movie, but you don't put food on their table. You don't pay their bills. A lot of Hollywood is living in a bubble. They're pretty out of touch with the common person, the everyday guy out there providing for their family. I think it's a great quote. I agree with it. And I think it's something that we show a lot here on the mid-side. But I think what needs to happen is the everyday person needs to start making that connection to not paying attention to what they're saying politically, but also seeing how that affects their art. I don't think people have made that connection yet, that the ideas that these people put in their art. I mean, look at Doctor Strange. It's very easy to get from what Doctor Strange was about to Hillary Clinton supporting her for president.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, something else to sort of pay attention to here, and I don't know what this says about Snyder or what this says about DC or anything, but did you see, William, that the guy who one of the guys who executive produced Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad, who became Trump's lead fundraising person, is now going to be the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, or however you say his name?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
It makes you wonder. It just raises questions.
Man.
That's all I'm saying. There are connections here. And at some point, do we need to have that revolt against the media elite and against the entertainment industry?
Yeah, I think the fact that people in LA, I mean, I'm here in LA, you're pretty close to LA, they're just out of touch.
It's all LA. Like,
they're just out of touch. I mean, just in general. So it doesn't surprise me that not only are they so out of touch that they don't realize it, but now they're offended to be called out on it.
Right. And what I'm saying is people elsewhere in America are out of touch with how out of touch LA people are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So think about that. And we'll talk about stuff that's even crazier in Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will.
The first Reddit is, again, a news story and not a Reddit, because this shows you what's going on with Reddit. So apparently we killed Yahoo Answers by using it on the show, and I guess we're killing Reddit now. So in the Washington Post, there's the headline, "Fearing yet another witch hunt, Reddit bans Pizzagate. Citing its policy against posting the personal information of others, Reddit has banned the Pizzagate conspiracy from the site. Pizzagate conspiracy board from the site. Pizzagate, a persistent and popular conspiracy theory that combines Clinton dysphoria with accusations of a secret pedophile ring, has been a steady force in the enclaves of the pro-Donald Trump internet for the past few weeks. The ban triggered a wave of criticism on r/the_Donald, the popular pro-Donald Trump subreddit, from users who felt the decision to ban the Pizzagate board amounted to censorship. Reddit CEO Steve Huffman, who of course we talked about last week, who was editing posts of pro-Trump people, only heightened these fears among the conspiracies when he admitted those changes." So what do you say about this, William? Is this a big deal, or is Pizzagate such a joke that it's not a big deal?
I think Pizzagate is such a joke that it's not a big deal, certainly. But this is part of a larger pattern with Reddit kind of closing stuff down and Twitter closing stuff down. And you know, it is a disturbing trend of Reddit has always struggled trying to find this balance between policing content so that it's actually relevant and free-ish of trolls, and also being a area where it is free to communicate things that are not mainstream and popular. And I don't mean that things on Reddit aren't popular, just that it can be a source of information if you're just not going off of whatever is in the mainstream media.
Yeah, but the problem is they've created their own echo chamber, you know, with all the pro-Birdie stuff and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a lot. I mean, Reddit is all echo chambers in most of the subreddits. But that's... that gets back to how the mod system works and just the way that the I forgot what's above a moderator. There's a level above the moderator that can shut on and off subreddits. That's sort of, they've always struggled with that model of figuring out what is allowed and not allowed on the site, or what they should and should not encourage.
Well, it's the old theory of you should be allowed to make fun of everything or allowed to make fun of nothing. You can't sort of have a line there. So you should be allowed to say anything. But the problem with that is, and this is a drum I've been beating for a long time, that's just a problem inherent in the internet. When you allow the anonymity, people will do things they wouldn't normally do and say things they wouldn't normally say. When you talk about doxing people, you know, posting public information, people wouldn't do that if they weren't anonymous. They can only do that if they were anonymous. So they're trying to have a community that sort of operates like it's not anonymous when it is.
Yeah, I see anonymous communication that's just not going to work that way.
Yeah. So, you know, Reddit will always give... Go ahead.
Once we do get truly anonymous communication, it's going to be very different. Mostly trolls. I mean, that's the thing with, you know, I've worked with admitting forums before, and, you know, having sort of a semi-anonymous model, which is kind of what Reddit has, but it takes a lot of policing, and the more that you tie it to someone's identity, the less work it takes, but also the more of this sort of echo chamber.
So are you saying that if you get rid of the anonymity, it becomes more of an echo chamber?
No, I'm saying, yeah, if you get rid of the anonymity, it becomes more of an echo chamber. You get what happens on, like, this is something that's happened on a lot of the sort of mainstream atheist blogs. They had a huge kerfuffle about SJWs kind of moving into the atheist community. And, you know, instead of having discussions, they get in flame wars, and then there's banning, and then the community fragments and then becomes echo chamber.
Interesting. I never thought of that as the cognate for and the cognate of the problem of anonymity, but it makes sense because people are worried about being socially shamed and socially excluded.
Right. And especially in today's climate with the social justice warriors, where arguments are not arguments in the sense of logical reasons, they are basically just posing, right? They're just emotions being thrown around, and
yeah, it's virtue signaling.
And virtue signaling, yeah, that's all it is. So if you can't have a rational discussion, feminism, you know, modern third wave feminism being broken because that's anti-women. So we just listen to that. Everyone has to virtue signal that they like women.
All right. I think that sums that up, and we'll go to the next Reddit, which is somewhat similar to what you're talking about when you talk about social shaming. This is a shower thought, and it says, getting offended when someone says Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, etc. is like getting offended by someone saying good morning because you're not a morning person. Do you agree with this, William? Or are they missing the point of something like Christmas and the holidays are more tied to someone's faith or belief system than being a morning person is? Are they equivocating
Christmas
here?
There's a little bit of equivocation, I think, but Christmas is a pagan holiday. It's an American holiday. It does have a religious background, but so do a lot of holidays. Like it's a uniquely American culture holiday. And I think Prager, you did a video on saying Merry Christmas, and he emphasized the religious background, and I think that he was absolutely wrong. It is an American holiday. Ayn Rand has wrote about it, how it's an American holiday, and you know, I would encourage people to read that if they're interested to see, you know, her argument about why it's a rational holiday. It's an American holiday, uniquely American holiday. This does point out something here, but it's, yeah, taking offense. Like, if someone wishes me a happy Hanukkah, I'm not going to be offended. Like, in that way, it's right, right? Like, I'm not Jewish, and I don't participate in that holiday. But if someone wishes me that, I'm not going to be offended. It's not insulting to wish me a happy Hanukkah.
It's a microaggression.
It's a microaffirmation, actually.
We could debate whether it's a microaffirmation versus a microaggression. That'll be interesting to think about. I think what it is, though, to build off of what you're saying, is I think this goes back to your point earlier about not primarily defining yourself as gay. Like, that's not the only part of your psychology and personality. And it's the same thing here. Like, if someone says Merry Christmas to me as an atheist, I don't get upset. Or, you know, say I was a Jewish, I wouldn't get upset. Because being an atheist or being Jewish wouldn't be the only part of my psychology and personality. And it's the same thing here. It's like being a morning person isn't the same thing. It is the same thing in that it's not the only part of your personality. Like, you're not solely defined by the fact that you're a morning person. Although that does remind me that I do get pissed off. And what I mean by that is what I get pissed off specifically about this time is people who wear t-shirts like, you know, oh, I'm a morning person, you're lucky I'm awake. Like, how fucking shallow and simplistic of a thinker do you have to be if that's how you define yourself?
Well, I was just sitting here thinking, is there a holiday that I would be offended if someone wished me a happy of? I was thinking maybe May Day or...
Cinco de Mayo? I'm not fucking Mexican. Those goddamn Mexicans taking my goddamn job. They try to have a holiday about freedom too, and it's one day, it's the 5th, and ours is the 4th. Fucking Mexicans trying to outdo us.
So if Daniel's here, would we have to celebrate 2.5 de Mayo?
I don't know how that. We'd have to ask him. I don't know.
Okay. Well, but I, you know, I'm trying to think if there is a holiday I would get offended at. I think maybe May Day might be one of them, or maybe Castro's birthday or something like that. That would certainly be one I would be offended if someone wished me a happy of.
But I would, even if they did that, I would be like, well, they're showing to me that they're a fucking idiot. I wouldn't get mad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Let's go to the last Reddit here. What seems like common sense to you, but not to the people around you?
Man, there's so many to choose from. I think something that's a little more concrete and mundane is just some of the stuff. Like, I've used a computer since I was 4 years old, and there's just certain things that are just so easy and just mundane to me that are really challenging for other people. And I don't mean that in any way insulting, right? Like, it's probably bad that I know exactly the key combinations to open up the control panel on a Windows machine, you know, like that's probably bad, right? Like, but I just know it, and it's just natural, and it's just common sense. And I remember, you know, early in my IT support career, like, being so surprised that people didn't just understand what to do, like how the computer thought, quote unquote, like how the computer operated. You know, half the people thought it was some sort of magical device, and other people just were constantly frustrated. And it was strange to me, that sort of interaction. So I think how to use basic computer stuff, it seems like common sense to me, but it's not.
Interesting what you did there with your answer to that question. I think the spirit of the question is more like, what's something that's really simple that people don't seem to understand? But you took it in the opposite direction. Some level of expertise you have that other people don't seem to have that same level of expertise. But to you, because you're an expert in it, it comes easy to you. Do you see that difference there?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's probably, I probably missed the question a bit. But that's the first thing that jumped into my mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you missed the question. I just think you took an interesting interpretation to it. I mean, if I were to do that, it would be like seeing movies for what they are type deal. Like, for instance, Midsider Alfred was one of the people who had asked me to see Arrival. And after I saw it, he asked me about it. And I was like, oh, well, you saw the two inverse stories there, right? That the baby was born at the end and died at the beginning, and that the Arrival went beginning to end. And he was like, no, I didn't see that. And to me, it was just obvious. But yeah, to me, that's not common sense. I've learned over the years that that's my expertise and what I'm good at and the way I've trained my brain. To me, common sense is sort of like if you procrastinate and put off things that are important, it will come back to bite you in the long run. Just like these people who don't take care of themselves. Like, that's what I don't understand. Or driving in a way that's non-dangerous. I don't understand how people like... can think, oh, I'm just going to change lanes now and think they're not going to get hit. And I don't know how they go along for so long without getting hit. Is it because other people are so afraid of getting hit, they just get out of the way of them?
Good luck, everybody.
Is that a Family Guy reference?
That's South Park.
Okay. All right. Let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that Santa Claus is the root of terrorism.
fucking fat old white people. God fucking damn it. It's everything that's wrong. Santa Claus is everything that's wrong with America.
He's the pinnacle of white privilege. He's the most white and the most privileged.
All that fat is his privilege.
Justin, what did you learn today?
I learned two things. First of all, I learned that you had three customers. Is that the accurate count, or how many did you mute with the cough button?
Yeah, I think it was around three. I don't know. I'll have to go up front and see.
I told you I was going to count. And the second thing is I learned what a micro-affirmation is.
That's right.
So if you would like to micro-affirm us, go ahead and do that on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. You know, you don't have to directly compliment us. You don't have to directly affirm us, but just leave us those 5 stars and, you know, maybe say something vaguely positive. Or even if you want to do a microaggression, we will take that as a microaffirmation because we do not have interpersonal hostility.
And you could also contribute your microaffirmation through Patreon.
Even $0.01. Every cent is a microaffirmation.
That's right.
We need to keep the lights on, as James would say. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, as I said at the top of the show. William is on Twitter. William, what's your Twitter?
It's LaForge, LaForge underscore.
Isn't one of those O's a zero, though?
Yeah, that's how it shows up.
But that's not how you type it in? I'll take that silence as a no. All right. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day! I think that it was crashing right then because I said yes and then it didn't record or it didn't go through.